the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to give you an update in just a few minutes on the Terri Schiavo case. Breaking news out of Florida. It looks like the federal judge has called a recess, although he has given indications that a decision still might be coming down today about the reinsertion of a feeding tube to Terri that would continue her life and at least give her another chance to have the kind of hearing she deserves in a federal court. The big topic for today's conversation is going to be a very different matter, and one that I think is going to be a fascinating discussion for us. I really want to know what you think about this, because I don't want to let the congressional hearings of last week go without our conversation, and that is about the issue of steroids and the use of steroids by athletes, and in particular the controversy over Major League Baseball. Now, I want to tell you that I think, well, at one level, I'm just fascinated by the different responses to the testimony, to the whole question of congressional investigations, to baseball, to steroids, to drug use, you name it. But I want you to call. I want to know how you think about this and how we ought to frame this as intelligent Christians, concerned and operating out of a Christian worldview. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Well, right now, U.S. District Judge James Whittemore in Pinellas Park, Florida, is going to be considering what to do in the case of Terri Schiavo. Now, how in the world did this get there? Let's just kind of rehearse what's happened since we were last together on Friday. The last several hours have been nothing less than incredible because, after all, what we have here is an unprecedented action by the United States Congress and by the United States President in signing a piece of legislation that will give Terri Schiavo an opportunity for a hearing. Now, the model for this hearing is the same kind of a federal opportunity that an inmate on death row would have, who would be pleading for a stay of execution. This is a very similar process. There is now given to Terri Schiavo and to her family the right to have her case considered by a federal court in order to look at due process questions and equal protection questions to make sure that that her rights have been protected. Now, as of right now, Judge Whittemore, this is U.S. District Judge James Whittemore, has called a recess, and it could be that even in the course of our program this afternoon, we'll have news of a ruling. Now, there are a lot of questions. For instance, Judge Whittemore could decide that he's not going to grant some kind of legal action that would guarantee the reinsertion of the tube. There's then a question about what kind of appeal would be possible. Can Congress appeal? Could the United States government appeal through the president to a U.S. District Court of Appeal? This is still very, very interesting and unfolding before us. But, you know, over the last several days, I've noted some patterns in the media I want to talk about. One of the patterns has to do with language. And when you just listen to the way the issue is framed, you know, we know this. We understand what happens in terms of political propaganda, in terms of mass communication. We know that language and definitions mean everything. And so you hear things thrown around. And in the background to this are some legal precedents that many Christians simply aren't really familiar with. Number one, a lot of this comes down out of the infamous Nancy Cruzan case, now over 20 years old from the U.S. Supreme Court, that determined that an American citizen has what is known as a right to die, or more than that, more legally construed, a right to refrain from accepting medical treatment, to terminate medical treatment, or to decline medical treatment. Now, in order for the court to get there, certain legal determinations had to be made. And here again, the law is the instrument because we live in a society that litigates in terms of the big questions. Now, I think that's a mistake. We've talked on this program many times about the fact that a recourse to the courts like this simply makes everything a matter of contested litigation rather than being the kind of democratic process in an orderly constitutional plan that I believe our founders had in mind. But that's just the reality. We're in a litigious age. The courts are where the action is right now. It's a symptom of our problem, but it's the reality. And in the Nancy Cruzan case, a couple of determinations came down. One of them was that the continuation of feeding and hydration amounts to medical treatment. Now, a lot of folks back then recognized we were in big trouble with that determination. But that's exactly where we are here, because most of us, so, well, for instance, when you hear about someone being on life support or some kind of extenuating medical treatment, you think of something like a ventilator. Terri Schiavo's breathing on her own. She's been breathing on her own for 15 years. You wouldn't know that from a lot of media reports. And when they talk about declining medical treatment, we're not talking about declining antibiotics, not talking about declining surgery or some kind of medical intervention. We're talking about food by a feeding tube and hydration. Now, once food and water became defined by the courts as medical treatment, and thus there was claimed the right to decline them, then everything's changed. And that's how we get into the situation where a woman could be legally and court mandated starved to death. Another fascinating aspect in this is who gets to decide. Because in the case of Terri Schiavo, she left no advance directive. She left no what's called sometimes a living will. She left no instructions. And so we are dependent upon her husband. And according to the courts, it is a husband, a spouse in this case, who has the first right. And in terms of the court's determination, the sole right to determine whether or not such a thing could continue and what was Terry's will in this. But here's the question, because I think most of us would say that's the right thing to do. And under most circumstances, certainly it should be a spouse who should be on the front line to make these decisions. But what if the spouse is acting in bad faith? What if it can be demonstrated that there could be a nefarious purpose, an immoral purpose, a split kind of identity here, a split kind of purpose, a divided loyalty in the case of a spouse? Because we certainly have that in the case of Michael Schiavo. We have a man who already has another woman, another family, other children. We have a man who, when he was in the courts fighting for a malpractice award, made arguments about what he was going to do in terms of treatment for Terri and staying with Terri and seeing her through this entire process. You know, we now have a man who's shifted gears considerably. There are many, many bona fide, obvious reasons to believe that this man's not operating in good faith. So here's the question. If the spouse has this right, what do we do in a situation in which it appears that the spouse is operating out of bad faith? Now, one last issue before we leave the Terri Schiavo situation, and this is where I think a lot of conservatives are off the reservation and dangerously giving away the store in terms of the integrity of human life. I hear some people say, you know, the issue is whether or not she's in a PVS, a persistent vegetative state. And I've heard some conservative commentators, some Christians say, well, you know, if we find out she's in a persistent vegetative state, then we'll understand. Well, we're going to understand what? Are we going to accept the argument that if one is in a persistent vegetative state, that one forfeits the right to live? Are we going to suggest that being made in the image of God and being understood as possessing human life that is sacred and worthy of defense ends the moment one is in a persistent vegetative state? I don't think so. Number one, who gets the right to say that? You know, this is the quality of life argument. And if you begin the quality of life argument there, then what comes later? Well, we've already seen on this program what comes later. You have others arguing, well, here's someone with extreme spinal bifida. Here's someone with, you know, just an uncommon form of medical ailment. Here's someone who has been diagnosed with a terminal disease. Pretty fast, you can just go right down and you say, well, I don't accept slippery slope arguments. Well, what are you going to accept when you're at the bottom of that slippery slope? Because in this kind of society, we can get there very fast. We will be watching this situation. Of course, we will bring you any news that comes out of the Terri Schiavo situation. We're all awaiting the decision by U.S. District Judge James Whittemore. And just in a very short order, it's likely we're going to know where we stand there. By the way, before I leave this entirely, James Q. Wilson has an excellent op-ed piece in today's Wall Street Journal about this. I just want to read you a paragraph out of what he has to say. James Q. Wilson's a very well-known social theorist and an ethicist. He said this: a moral imperative should be that medical care cannot be withheld from a person who is not brain dead and who is not at risk for dying from an untreatable disease in the near future. To do otherwise makes us recall Nazi Germany, where retarded people and those with serious disabilities were euthanized, that is, killed. We hear around the country echoes of this view and the demands that doctors be allowed to participate, as they do in Oregon, in physician-assisted suicide, whereby doctors can end the life of patients who request death and have less than 6 months to live. This policy endorses the right of a person to end his or her life with medical help. It is justified by the alleged success of this policy in the Netherlands. But it has not been a success in the Netherlands. In that country, there have been well over 1,000 doctor-induced deaths among patients who had not requested death. And in a large fraction of those cases, the patients were sufficiently competent to have made the request had they wished. Keeping people alive is the goal of medicine. We can only modify that policy in the case of patients for whom death is imminent and where all competent family members believe that nothing can be gained by extending life for a few more days. This is certainly not the case with Terri Schiavo. Indeed, her death by starvation may take weeks. Meanwhile, her parents are pleading for her life. Ladies and gentlemen, we would not even know about Terri Schiavo if it were not for her parents. If her parents had agreed with her husband that she doesn't have a quality of life worth living and that her life should be terminated with the removal of a feeding tube and hydration, we wouldn't know about it. And in over 1,000 cases a year, persons are treated in just this way. But God bless these two parents who would not take Michael Shivo's demand for his wife's death as the final decision. God bless them. We need to be praying for them. We need to pray for Terry. We need to pray for this judge. And we'll bring you the news as soon as it breaks. When we come back, we're going to be talking about something that has to do with everyday life, has to do with kids, teenagers, sports, the Olympics, right now, Major League Baseball. It's steroids. What are we to make of this? I find some conservatives split on this particular issue. I want to know what you think. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue, baseball, sports, athletes, and steroids. Now, how's that for a mouthful? But how do we untangle this knot? What do we think about all this? You know, I have been surprised by the reaction or non-reaction in several circles. I'm not a big sports fan. So, I mean, it's not like I watch this every day and am concerned about it. But when Congress began the hearings on baseball and steroids, the House of Representatives, you know, I was surprised by how many conservatives said, hey, this is Congress acting in a way that they shouldn't be intruding. They should stay out of this. You know, all you have to do is bring up sports among some guys, and you've got an instant debate. You know, who's better than whom? Who could beat whom? What about all the baseball stats? There's some people who live and die by this stuff. I mean, they can rattle off. I know 15-year-old kids who could rattle off statistics like crazy. Well, what do you do with this? What about the influence on young people? What about young people dying, committing suicide that is directly attributable to the use of hormonal steroids? I think there are big questions here. And I have to tell you, I think the biggest context for all of this is the medicalization of society and the way we are transforming what it means to be human by the use of performance-enhancing substances. And there's really no question about these substances being used, is there? I mean, after all, we've seen the before and after pictures. You know, once you reach about the age of 30, guys, we do not have what it takes to start putting on this kind of muscle mass. This takes pills. This takes this takes testosterone, derivatives, hormones. And, you know, some of these are available almost over the counter. I mean, you can go to the local natural food store and buy some stuff that could show up as a steroidal influence. But a lot of this is also the cooked stuff, the stuff that's made in labs with doctors who are trying to come up with non-traceable steroids. You know, I think in order to get a view of the perplexity of this, we need to listen to a little of the testimony that came before Congress last week. First of all, let's listen to Bud Selig. He's the commissioner of Major League Baseball, and this is what he had to say on March 16.
I will suspend any player who tests positive for an illegal steroid. There will be no exceptions. The union is aware of that, and they accept it.
Okay, Bud Selig. Now, what's wrong with that statement? Well, I can tell you that observers of Major League Baseball say there are a couple of things wrong with it. Number one, it's one thing for the commissioner to say that I will suspend any player who tests positive, but if you set up the testing thing so it's not likely that you don't catch them, then you don't have to suspend them. And at least as of last week, Major League Baseball was talking about an annual test. Well, I am told by informed persons that you can come up with such fastly mutated drugs in terms of the world of steroids that a lot of this can be made so that, you know, it's non-traceable. You can just stay ahead of it. Now, by the way, that's been a big controversy in terms of doping in the Olympics, where, you know, people are using drugs that are just ahead of the screening process. That, you know, it takes just a slight change, just a different kind of steroid profile, and you end up with something else. There are those who are suggesting that Major League Baseball still isn't serious about this. That was the justification put forth by members of Congress for having the hearings in the first place. The Major League Baseball, which, after all, comes under congressional review because Congress gave baseball the only exemption from the antitrust laws that Congress said this was our justification because they're simply not serious about this. U.S. Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky, a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame, had this to say.
If they started in 1992 or 93 illegally using steroids, wipe all of their records out. Take them away. They don't deserve them. Go ask Henry Aaron. Go ask the family of Roger Maris. Go ask all of the people that played without enhanced drugs if they would like their records compared with the current records.
Fascinating. Now, I give a lot of credence to what Senator Bunning says. I mean, after all, he is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And so you can't really say that he's got some kind of hidden agenda. By the way, he's a senator, not a congressman. It was the House that decided to have these hearings, and it sounds to me like Jim Bunning said it was a good idea. And what do you think of his argument, which he says those who took these drugs should have their statistics simply wiped out? Others have said they ought to have an asterisk beside them. In other words, these were drug-assisted, hormonally assisted statistics. Now, I think for most of us who are paying any attention to these hearings, the truly fascinating comments and non-comments were made by Mark McGuire. Let's listen to what he had to say. We're going to listen to two different clips. Clip one, and then, guys, go to clip two.
If they started in 1992 or...
I do not sit in judgment of other players, whether it deals with their sexual preference, their marital problems, or other personal habits, including whether or not they use chemical substance. That has never been my style, and I do not intend to change this just because the cameras are turned on. Nor do I intend to dignify Mr. Canseco's book. It should be enough that you consider the source of the statements in the book, and that many inconsistencies and contradictions have already been raised.
Okay, hold on just a minute there. That was Mark McGuire, the big hitter. Long home run hits. Many home run hits. More than Babe Ruth. Longer than Babe Ruth. But a lot of people say it's because he was on the itty-bitty pills. Now, here's the deal. What could Mark McGuire have said? He could have said one of two things. Yes, I used steroids. Or he could have said, no, I didn't use steroids. Instead, he did the most ridiculous dance all over the issue. I mean, after all, if he played baseball this way, he never would have gotten to base. He would have been running in circumlocutions all over the field. A man who knows how to run from point A to point B on the baseball field couldn't get from one word to another with any moral clarity when he was testifying under oath before Congress. But if he had very little to say there, he said even less in another statement.
Asking me or any other player to answer questions about who took steroids in front of television cameras will not solve the problem. If a player answers no, he simply will not be believed. If he answers yes, he risks public scorn and endless government investigations. My lawyers have advised me that I cannot answer these questions without jeopardizing my friends, my family, and myself.
Now, that's as close as you can come to taking the fifth.
You are cowards.
That's as close as you can come to taking the fifth. Mr. McGuire wanted to come back on me, but nonetheless, I have the final word. He didn't say anything. He could have said, I didn't take steroids, period. And I defy anyone to come up with medical evidence that I did. But he didn't say that. Instead, he did this dance about it being inappropriate to ask these questions under the glare of television. Well, guess what, Mr. McGuire? Those questions have been asked for a long time before it came to congressional hearings, and no one will answer honestly. And what about the morality of this assertion? If a player answers no, he simply will not be believed. Well, whose fault is that? We've seen the before and after pictures. Something's going on here. Now, there are people who say this is just nobody's business. We live in a society that takes drugs. We drink coffee. We experience caffeine. We take beta blockers. We take all kinds of drugs. These athletes are taking drugs. Fair's fair. Just let them take whatever they want to take. Just don't get caught. What about the teenagers? When we come back, we're going to hear from a father who gave testimony before Congress about his son, who's no longer alive because of steroids. We have hearts breaking down. Literally, because of the stress of taking these steroids. We have kids who are going into hormonal rages. We have boys and young men who are committing suicide because of the emotional effect of these hormones. Are we really saying to kids, if you want to play in a major league sport, if you want to get a football scholarship to go play college, if you want to do these things, you better take drugs because that's the only way to get big enough, fast enough, and powerful enough to do it. If you want to admit it or not, that's the message we're sending to our kids, and Major League Baseball players are a big part of sending that message. Still, some people say, hey, if you can enhance your performance, take whatever pill. We'll be back to talk about it. I want to know what you think. I want to know how we should think about this. I think we need to think together. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The Christian worldview has to be informative about how we would think about these performance-enhancing drugs. Steroids today, what comes tomorrow? We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. I think this is an interesting issue because it isn't one on which most people are very dogmatic in terms of not so much whether one should use steroids or not. I think we probably will have a pretty good consensus against that. But it's hard to be dogmatic for a lot of people about what to do about it and who should do it and what kind of sanctions should be in place, what kind of investigations and testing should be in place. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I think we need to keep our eye on the prize here, which is not just about Major League Baseball because, you know, frankly, if they never played another game, I would think it was a lamentable loss to American tradition, but I wouldn't waste a minute crying about it. Now, I know, and some of you are out there wondering what kind of insane idiot is this, but nonetheless, I mean, that's just me. I do not know the statistics. I can't rattle them off. There are people who live with this. There are people who have a red letter statistic book of Major League Baseball. I mean, they just live by this stuff. But not me. So I'll admit, I may not be the best person to look at this from a sports angle. I'm going to look at this from an angle of the Christian worldview. And to keep our eye on the prize, let's remember that there are kids watching these players and learning lessons. And I think we need to hear from a dad who gave testimony before Congress last week. This is Donald Hooten, who lost his son to steroids. He said this to Congress.
You are cowards when it comes to facing your fans and our children. Why don't you behave like we try to teach our kids to behave? Show our kids that you're man enough to face authority, tell the truth, and face the consequences. Instead, you hide behind the skirts of your union, and with the help of management and your lawyers, you've made every effort to resist facing the public today.
Well, Mr. Hooten was speaking, obviously, those words as if he were talking to baseball players. He was giving testimony, however, to Congress. And he accused Major League Baseball of hiding behind their skirts on this issue, of kowtowing to the union, and in collusion with management and lawyers, resisting public accountability on the issue of steroids. Now, the other reason we're talking about this today is because of a friend of mine who was a pastor and who shared with me that a 16-year-old boy, a baseball player in his church, committed suicide on what was known as an android steroid rage. He was taking these drugs, and it produced a violent temperament. When he went off of it, he went into a depression and ended up hanging himself. And all because he just wanted to play big-time ball. And he was just following the example of those that he saw bulking up, adding speed and adding power with the use of hormonal steroids. Well, again, I want to know what you think. There may be some baseball fans out there who say, look, if they take enough of these drugs, they can be hitting half-mile home runs, and that's a good thing. What about, should we have different rules for the Olympics, different rules for college sports than for the pros? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Nathan, listening on WFIA-FM. Nathan, go right ahead.
Well, I couldn't agree more with Mr. Hooten that I think it's a travesty to baseball, and it's a sham because, regardless of your profession, integrity is the key issue here. And Mark McGwire has no integrity whatsoever. I am from St. Louis. I've lived in St. Louis all my life before moving here to Louisville. And I couldn't agree more with Representative William Clay, who said that the portion of interstate of I-70, which was renamed Mark McGwire Parkway the year he hit 70 home runs in 1998, should be torn down.
Nathan, let me ask you a question here. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want your input on something here. Mark McGwire, in comments before Congress, we heard a couple of clips, but he said something else that really perplexed me. He said this. He said, when he was asked point blank, did you use steroids? He says, I do not want to dwell on the past. I want to be positive about the present. Well, you know, Nathan, my thought about that is, you know, his place in the record books is not based on the present. It's based on the past. My guess is that's not the past he wants to talk about, because if it is talked about honestly, he's going to have a lot of accounting to do. What do you think?
Well, that's exactly what he's going to have to do. And my son, who obviously is a big Mark McGwire fan, asked me about why Mark McGwire brought a lawyer to the Senate. He said he thought that he needed him for some reason. And I told my son, I said, Paul, if you never robbed a bank, you don't need a lawyer.
You know, I think, Nathan, most of us understand that if you can answer no, You don't need a whole lot of support to say no. It is a simple two-letter English word. And if you can't say no, it takes a lot of attorneys and a lot of cleverness to get around saying no, because they can't say yes. I want to know what you think. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Are we making a mountain out of a molehill? Is this something that's none of our business? Should we simply not ask? Should we have a don't ask, don't tell policy about steroids? How do we hold an organization, an entire movement, an institution like Major League Baseball accountable? Give me a call, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Albert Mueller Program. The issue is baseball and steroids. Frankly, even beyond that, athletics and steroids. Pro, college, high school. What do we figure out about all this? Because there are grave moral issues at stake. We heard the testimony given by Mr. Hooten about his son who died after taking steroids. And, of course, we have other reports of suicides and all the rest. And furthermore, we have just unquestionable medical research that's coming in to tell us that when young boys and young guys take these steroids, it has incredible effects upon them. It can enlarge the heart. It not only enlarges muscles, it has other effects as well. That hormonal imbalance, especially taken by boys or in adolescence, it leads to all kinds of things, including effects upon the reproductive organs. Not good effects. This is one of those realities in which we realize that we're teaching something significant as a society to our young people. And they're watching these guys breaking the records, and they're doing it by popping the pills, and so they're doing the same thing. Let's go to Jim calling from Hermiston, Oregon, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Jim, we're glad to have you. Go right ahead.
Hi, Al. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
We're glad to hear from you. Go right ahead. I want to hear your story.
Hey, well, listen, I have a son who's a 29-year-old power lifter, and he is absolutely, completely, 100% drug-free, and he competes against people who are not drug-free, and he trains with those who are as he says, on the juice. And it's an environment, athletics is an environment anymore of how good can you get, how strong can you get, and the bottom line is how strong can you get. It is not about character. And I can't believe that he has people who just absolutely tell him there's no way he's drug-free. He is so strong, and he takes it as a backhanded compliment that he is as strong as he is because of talent, time, and hard work, and he's done it over a period of 10-15 years. But I've always wondered, where is someone in baseball, football, basketball, anyone who comes forward and says, I'm going to take a blood test. That's what I'm going to do, because a blood test is more reliable than a urine test.
Yeah, you know, Jim, you raise a couple of very good issues here. I want you to stay with me for a minute. It's great to hear from you there in Oregon, and it's great to hear from a dad of a powerlifter. You know, when you think about this, and you look, the first issue you raised was inequality. I mean, basically, your son who doesn't take the drugs is having to compete with people who do. So obviously, you have an equity issue here. How do you know how good someone is if they're all pumped up on drugs? But then you also raise the influence issue in terms of what this says. You know, Jim, when you look at this and you think about this as a dad and as a sports fan and all the rest, what would you propose as the way we as a society should deal with this? Testing, sanctions, what?
Yeah, no, it's got to be testing. It's got to be serious sanctions. Baseball had a very serious way of dealing with steroids. I was really disappointed in what Mark McGwire said. I just love Mark McGwire, and that, you know, that summer of '98. That's a big summer, but he just really disappointed me. We need someone of his character to say, I took steroids, I really am sorry I did, or I did not take it, and someone proved to me that I took it because I didn't do it. We've got to educate the young kids that if you're a junior in high school and you really want to play big-time professional football, you might not be able to do it until you're 25 or 26. It might take you that long to get strong enough to do it, and it's okay to do it.
Yeah, you know, that's a great statement, Jim, because I think a lot of this is just a shortcut. And, you know, all these kids, they want to get there. And I feel for these kids because a lot of them see it as a way out. It, not only is it their their ambition, their life's purpose, and, you know, especially among a lot of young guys, that just sports begins to eclipse everything. But for a lot of these kids, it can even be an economic way of escape. It can be a way of getting out of a bad situation, of creating a dream and living it out. But that dream can turn to a nightmare if you have a heart that collapses, if you have a body that simply breaks down. And frankly, Jim, I like the focus you put on character in the first place, because if you have in sports only athletics, only strength, and you have only endurance and statistics without character, well, what have you got? That's a big question. You've got a very hollow victory at the very least. Jim, it's great to hear from you from Oregon. We're going to go to Richard. You're listening on WFI-FM. Richard, what do you think about this?
Hey, Dr. Moeller. I think, first off, it underscores the fundamental thing that if we place our trust or our confidence in anyone besides Jesus Christ, we should not be surprised that we are let down.
You got a clay feet issue, Richard, do you think?
Well, we're spending a lot of time focusing on the kids, but my question would be, where are the parents supervising these drugs? I don't know if you've been to a Little League ball diamond recently, but you'll see kids with $200 bats, and there are more lessons available to these kids than anything when I ever grew up.
Well, it's no longer really an avocation anymore. You know, for some of these kids, it is an absolute eclipsing concern. I mean, they have coaches, they have advisors, they go to lessons, and thousands of dollars. You have these all-star games and special teams to get to play, and it can cost a lot of money as well. You know, Richard, you raise another issue. And by the way, the New York Times had a fascinating article yesterday by Kate Zernike, and it was entitled "The Difference Between Steroids and Ritalin Is," and then it had ... ellipses as if to say what. This is what she said. She said, Americans are relying more and more on a growing array of performance-enhancing drugs. Lawyers take the anti-sleep drug Progvigil, to finish that all-night brief in hopes of concentrating better. Classical musicians take beta blockers, which banish jitters before a big recital. Is the student who swallows a Ritalin before taking the SAT unethical? If the pill gives her an unfair advantage over other students? If a golfer pops a beta blocker before a tournament, is he eliminating a crucial part of competition? Interesting questions. By the way, Mary Eberstadt, in her book, Home Alone, had a fascinating comment when she said that the armed services aren't taking kids who admit to taking Ritalin, simply because they're not sure what they've got. And, you know, that's a very interesting question. Richard, we appreciate your call. You know, what do you think of a society that drives our kids to take these drugs? I think it's a sick society. I think it's a society that is more focused on statistics than character, is more focused on strength of body, whether it's brought about by hormones and steroids or by hard work rather than strength of character. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we focus on breaking records. And that's not an insidious wrong or simply lowly aspiration in itself, but at what cost? You know, we used to think about human achievement in terms of achievement, but now it's not just in athletics; it's in other fields. There are shortcuts that a lot of people are taking, and some are saying you're just stupid if you don't. I mean, that's the insidious argument. That's the truly evil and nefarious thing out there, that there are those who are saying, hey, if you don't do this, you're simply not smart. This is the way to get ahead. And our kids are getting the message. And all it takes is a couple of models like Mark McGuire, who couldn't even say yes or no before Congress, and we're going to have a complete moral breakdown here. I don't think this issue's over. I don't think it's even over before Congress. We'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. I'm Albert Moeller. Got news out of Florida in the case of Terry Schiavo. U.S. District Judge James Whittemore has given no indication of when he will give a ruling on the request from parents, that is Terry Schiavo's parents, the Schindlers, to order the tube, her feeding tube, reinserted. He said this afternoon, I will not tell you when, how, or how long it will take. Well, Mr. Judge, I sure hope, Your Honor, you rule on this pretty quickly, because if it takes too long, Terry Schiavo will be dead. Because already you can imagine what is happening in her body with the feeding tube removed at 1:45 p.m. on Friday. And so we'll be watching this very closely. I tell you, it's not going to go away. It's real clear that this is an issue that is going to have press attention, media attention, and is going to be talked about for some time. But this is not a hypothetical issue. It's not an esoteric academic issue. It's a real-life issue. In a hospice in Pinellas Park, Florida, is a woman who's being starved to death. And she is breathing on her own. She is not brain dead. And that's really all you need to know to see we have a tragedy in the making. It is a court-enforced, court-mandated tragedy, and it's one that ought to have the attention and concern of every American. We need to look at this, especially Christians who understand the sanctity of human life and realize what we're up against. And I know sometimes we get tired of talking about the same issues and hearing about them over and over again. But, folks, what are we going to do? Are we just going to put Terri Schiavo out of mind? Are we going to say, well, we did everything we could? No, we're going to track this thing all the way. All the way. We need to pray for Terri. We need to pray for her parents and for all those who are working on this case for the sanctity of human life. We need to pray for Judge Whittemore here. We need to pray that he'll reach the right decision. And frankly, we've got to realize that we need to talk to our neighbors and friends and family members about this, because you look at the survey data and it shows a lot of confusion. There's an awful lot of confusion out there, and it just may happen that God has you where you can dispel some of that confusion and speak a word of enlightenment. It just may be that God has you where you can speak in defense of human life and make clear what the issues really are and speak on behalf of the dignity and sanctity of human life, because every single human being is made in the image of God. Some of you may need some tools for this. You can find some resources at our website, www.albertmohler.com. That's ALBERTMOHLER.com. All you have to do is go in the search section, put in Schiavo, or you can put in euthanasia or right to life, and you'll come up with a host of articles and some good coverage. You can also be looking at some of the most important issues of the day by going to the Daily Crosswalk Commentary, and you can see the issues that I take up on a daily basis. Today, issues of foreign policy with Natan Sharansky and the influence upon President Bush. Tomorrow, we're going to be looking at the legacy of George F. Kennan. The fact that many of you don't know his name is the reason why you need to go look at the article. That's at albertmohler.com. And tomorrow, we'll be back to talk about some of the most important issues with intelligent design. We're going to see why the evolutionists are literally quaking in their boots and why the school boards are trying to run from this all over the country. And then Wednesday's Ask Anything Wednesday. You can go ahead and email your question and get ready to call on Wednesday. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.